Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode number 198. This is going to be called Race Bandits and Excessive Exercise. I got a couple articles that I saw recently, I guess over the last couple weeks, that kind of got me thinking about some things. So I'm going to do a little discussion on race bandits, excessive running, excessive mileage. And, of course, I think I've got some emails and email bag section of the show. We'll get to that. And it is the week of May 31st, 2014. I'd like to thank you for coming along. This is Ashland Dave. I'm coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, the center of the universe, Central Virginia, and getting very close to episode 200. Went on a little bit of a hiatus over the last couple of weeks since the last show. I would say probably week and a half of that was kind of being virtually unplugged from electronica. And then another week of that was, if you can sense my voice, I've had a pretty bad head and chest cold that put me down. I had to take a knee for about a week on that, although it kind of fell in between a big major hike I did with my family in the mountains, and then a 4 mile run this morning with my wife and Ashlyn Bryan. So we'll get to all that as the show progresses. And so let's get right in. Oh, I want to talk about the Stand Up and Be Counted campaign. Episode 200 is going to be a listener shout out show. Stand Up and Be Counted. I'm just going to kind of do a listener roll call, and there's still time to get involved in that. If you want to send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com, just send me your name and your location, and let me know how long you've been listening. I've just kind of been curious to know where people are from who listen to the show on a regular basis. And if you're a new listener, please come back. Hopefully this will be a good enough episode where you'll want to come back and listen, and definitely go back and listen to previous episodes. I can't remember who emailed me. You know who you are, but he asked for all episodes because they're not all on the Ashland or the Podbean website, because they only allow me to keep so many on that server. And so I burned everything to CDs for him and mailed them to him. So he's systematically going through each one. But the Stand Up and Be Counted campaign is just a listener survey. Just see who listens to the show. I don't use it for marketing. I've said that before. It's not used to spam you or anything like that. It's just because I'm curious. And the funny thing about it is, after I read your email and write your name down and where you're from for the list, I actually delete it, so I don't even save it. So let's talk about, the first thing I want to talk about is excessive running. This is an article that was in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, but it was actually written by a guy named Edward Evold of the Kansas City Star. It's a pretty short article, so I'm going to just read some portions of it, and I'm going to have some commentary as we go along, and because a couple things kind of, because I do a lot of, I run over 20 miles a week, and this article kind of targeted people like me. So it begins: if running 15 miles a week is heart healthy, running 45 miles a week gives you a cardiovascular system three times as clean and strong, right? A recent study sounds a serious alarm about such thinking, adding to a growing body of research on the topic of excessive endurance exercise. That's what an ultra runner is, an excessive endurance exercise. Getting back to the article, you've heard of the runner's high. Researchers now want you to hear about runner's plaque, coronary artery plaque. In short, running super long distances for many years might backfire on you. That's what got my attention when I read this article, that sentence right there: running super long distances for many years might backfire on you. Years of extreme exercise efforts appear to erase some benefits you get from moderate exercise, so that your risk of heart disease, of dying of coronary disease, is the same as a sedentary person, says James O'Keefe, preventive cardiologist at St. Luke's Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri. That hardly makes any sense to me, but this is coming from a cardiologist, and I know Jamie Delaney, who listens to the show, is a cardiologist. He's the one that told me it's a bad idea to eat eggs while you're running, although, God, they taste so good because they're so solid, you know, they sit in your stomach. So I'd be kind of interested to what her opinion is on that. I'm not sure if she still listens to the show, but I'm pretty sure she does. Better several years ago at a marathon in West Virginia when I was on crutches. Anyway, O'Keefe said the study found that men who were marathon... Okay, this is the part of this that didn't make any sense to me. O'Keefe said the study found that men who were marathon runners for 25 years had 62% more plaque buildup in their coronary arteries than men who were sedentary but were similar to the runners in other respects, including age. All right, let me dissect that down a little bit here. There is nothing similar about a sedentary person and a marathoner. There's nothing except for maybe how many days they've been on Earth, or maybe their name, or where they're from. But there is, in my opinion, there is nothing similar about a sedentary person and a marathoner. I don't know how this is. This really threw me out. And the increased quantity of plaque in the marathoner's arteries included both hard or calcified plaque and the more dangerous soft fatty plaque. The latter is the kind that can be predisposed to rupture and cause a heart attack. O'Keefe is co-author of the paper in the latest issue of Missouri Medicine, the Journal of the Missouri State Medical Association. The study was conducted by Robert Schwartz and colleagues at the Minneapolis Heart Institute Foundation. An unwavering advocate of exercise and its health benefits, O'Keefe said the study adds weight to the idea that the potent benefits of exercise are dose-dependent. That is, the right amount matters. Being sedentary is unhealthy. Regular, moderate exercise bestows long-term benefits. While logging huge numbers of miles and running marathons can keep you thinner, not in my case, I'm still 210, lower your risk of type 2 diabetes and offer other benefits, it appears the subsequent wear and tear on the heart is a potential drawback. O'Keefe said, the study's marathoners who had run at least one 26.2-mile race a year for 25 years, had a lower weight, resting heart rate, and body mass index than the non-runners. No shit, okay? The average age of both groups was in the 50s. That works out well for the three-milers. Keep doing that, O'Keefe said, but it's cautionary news for marathoners and ultramarathoners, at least those who have been at it for years. 2 years ago, in a report published by the journal Mayo Clinic Proceedings, O'Keefe and fellow authors cited evidence that extreme endurance training may cause structural damage to the heart, making it stiff and enlarged. That paper showed that moderate running distances 2 to 5 times a week at moderate speeds offered the best health benefits, and even 15 minutes a day of physical activity was helpful. O'Keefe worries that some people will use the findings to argue against exercise, but they would be ignoring the overwhelming evidence that being sedentary is clearly dangerous for the heart, he said. Most people will never have the super exercisers issues. For every person who is over-exercising, there are 19 people not getting enough exercise. Running about 15 to 20 miles a week provides optimal health benefits, or walking can provide benefits from 2 miles a day to as much as 40 miles a week. That's a lot of walking, 40 miles a week. That's a lot of running. Virtually all types of exercise and activities can also be protective, but moderation is best for long-term benefits, he says. So this really knocks the props out from under anyone with the excuse, I just don't have enough time, or I've never been an athlete. O'Keefe said you can train to be the most ultra-fit endurance athlete ever, but that's not what's required for longevity. Moderate exercise is. End of the article. So yeah, that's some food for thought. I think of my friend Thomas Mueller, who I interviewed in episode 197, Master Competitor. He's been running 100-mile ultras for years, and you look at a picture of him on his website, and he looks like he's in super shape for his age or otherwise. I mean, he looks like he's in super shape for even if he's was 30, but he's well over that. So I don't know. That article kind of gave me some food for thought, and here's kind of what I've been doing here lately. Is I've been alternating my weeks. I was going to talk about this later in the show, but I've signed up for two of the three races that I'm going to do this summer. last one I haven't signed up for, the Patrick Henry Half. And of course I got the 24-hour race on November 7th, which my goal is 50 miles in 12 hours. And in order for me to get up to that, then I need to be doing a couple 50-mile weeks, and I don't want to do that too early and peak too early, and then, you know, my body will wear down. I tend to break some when I get up to 50 miles, and then because I did exceed that, I think, a couple times when I was training before. Everything hurts all the time, and I just feel I'm afraid that I'm going to just get an overuse injury or like, you know, a fracture or something just from too much. So race day, you know, is always going to be hard. I always wonder if I could do more miles and more miles and more miles. Would it make race day any easier? I don't know. But anyway, race day is supposed to be hard. So I'm doing the Dahlgren 50K on August 2nd. Did that last year for the first time with Neil Richard. And Snuggy Bear was my crew. Did a great job. And John King ran that too. And then I'm going to have a big double shot weekend. I got the Patrick Henry Half on August 23rd. And then the next day, I'm doing the Annapolis 10-mile. I got into that. My good friend Lummix up in the Annapolis area signed me up for that. I think he put my wrong date of birth, but might be able to fix that. But he paid for that. I guess I'll pay him back. I'm not sure how we're going to work that out. So that's going to be a big weekend. And then so I've really got four races planned. And so what I've been doing over the last several weeks is I will do a 30-plus mile week, and then I'll drop it back into a 20-mile week or a little bit less, with the exception of this past week. The reason for that is I was sick, and we went on this hellacious hike, which I'll talk about here in a few minutes, up on Elliott Knob in the George Washington National Forest. It really just kicked our whole family's ass, including the dog. So what I'm hoping is that kind of the flip-flop with the mileage will actually benefit me for when those 30-plus mile weeks get to 40 and then start, you know, tipping up to 50. And what I really need to do is get out a calendar and plan those weeks out, because running 40 to 50 miles a week and working full-time and having a family, you got to plan for that stuff. We got swim meets coming up this summer. My daughter's in a show, a little play here in town that has rehearsals and, you know, all kinds of stuff that gets in the way. Well, it doesn't get in the way, but, you know, life. So that's kind of my strategy for the summer. I'm still a little bit on the honeymoon phase of training that I talked about a couple shows back. It's still fun. I do need to talk about my shoe situation. I'll move to that here in just a second, because I do want to talk about Race Bandits and share some thoughts on that. So yeah, that's where I'm at. I need to plan that out better. I kind of lost my train of thought. Let me talk about the shoes while I'm thinking about it. A couple shows back, I said that I got the Hoka 1-1s, and I really, really did like those. But believe it or not, I wore them out, and very disappointed with the way they wore out. I had about 350 miles on them. Well, that's when I retired them. But what happened was before that, the heel of the shoe on the outside it was just kind of starting to melt off. It wore so quick, and I'm a heel striker. I'm working on that. You know, I'm not the only one out there that does that. I know that's not the best way to run. But one of the reasons I got the Hokas is because they had so much cushion, and I really did like them. And they looked strange, but I liked them. I didn't really care what I looked like, but they had so much cushion and so much support that it was just great for me. You know, I didn't have the back pain and that I would get during the midweek, you know, in the evenings after the midweek runs. So, you know, I was sold on the whole brand until the heels wore out. And, you know, what was happening then was that the striking of the shoe was at an angle, and instead of flat, because the cushion, the rubber had worn off on the heel. And I was actually starting to have knee pain from that, I think. It looked weird. And then, you know, of course, the whole mental thing in your head of knowing that your heel is striking at an angle starts to mess with you. So I had to, I thought something maybe was wrong with the shoes. I didn't think that they should wear out that quick. I do about 70% road, 30% trail, during my training. And I just didn't think the shoes should wear out so soon. You know, at 300 miles, they had the heels had worn off on the outside. You know, through the outer layer of rubber. So it was on the, it was starting to go on the inner part, which would just melt off every time you'd run. It would come off because it's just not, that's the cushion part. It's not the tread. And so that will just come way off. So what I did was I did a complete impulse purchase, which I normally don't do for shoes. I was looking at a hand-me-down Runner's World, and I saw an advertisement for Altra's Olympus, Altra. I like the color. It was cool. It was kind of an orange, black, red, and I thought the shoe looked pretty cool. It looked like it had a lot of cushion. I immediately went on. Oh, and another thing I read in the ad was that it had the shoe was actually enlarged at the front, where your foot is wider, and it makes it for a bigger toe box. And I've always had this little lingering problem on my left foot, little toe, just always getting crammed up against the next toe, and it causes problems with the way the nail grows. And I've been dealing with this for years, all the way back to when I played soccer all the time, wearing cleats or studs. And the soccer shoes are very tight, and they have to be because, you know, you're kicking the ball and stuff. And I've always just dealt with this problem, and so I thought, you know what, I'm buying these shoes, I'm going to try them out, and we'll see what happens, because, and if they wear out as, and one of the, what I did is my wife encouraged me to contact Hoka, which I did by email, and told them, say, look, you know, I wore Asics for years, and, you know, I run on the same kind of terrain that I did with the Hokas, and the Asics do not wear out. Matter of fact, when I retire Asics at between 400 and 450 miles, they're actually in such still good shape that I just use them to cut grass. And I have like three pairs. Well, what I do is the old ones get rotated into grass cutting shoes. The ones that still look good, you know, the ones that maybe you can wear with a pair of jeans or something because they're still clean. I actually have those in my closet and wear them out. You know, on events where you can wear sneakers or whatever. And I was stymied by the way these things wore out so fast, and you know, really disappointed for the price. So I emailed the company at the encouragement of my wife, and because these shoes are expensive, they're, you know, way over $100, and I did like them. I was just disappointed with the way they wore out, and I thought maybe there was something defective, and so they said that I could mail them to them, and they'd have their shoe guy look at them to see if there's some kind of defect, and if so, I would get them back. Or I'd get a new pair back or something. And if not, they would just mail them back to me. And I was kind of expecting a little bit more, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't expecting a free pair of shoes. But, you know, when I told them, I said, look, these things wore out a lot quicker than, you know, my Asics did. And I haven't changed the way I run. I kind of thought there might be a response. But anyway, so right now the Hokas have been moved into the garage. And they might actually become grass cutting shoes. Of course, you can't wear those with jeans or pants at all because, you know, they're high-heeled running shoes is really what they are. All right, so I got the Altras, Altra, Olympus model, and they are some funny-looking shoes when you're looking down at your feet because the front part of the shoe, you know, near the toe is wider. It's kind of like big waffles on your feet. But I absolutely love them, and they have great cushioning. And I'm going to be, of course, I count the mileage on all my shoes. I do it in that little Runner's World where I put my mileage in. If you go to ashlanddave.podbean.com and you look over on the right, you can see I put my week, my daily runs in. I try to keep track with that online thing. And I get that linked to the podcast homepage just so you know, listeners to the show can see what I've run if they're interested in looking at that. I've also got my personal records down there, which ain't much to look at. But anyway, I did, and it's got all the distances that I've run. So we'll see where the Ultras are at 350 miles. And what I'm looking at them right now, they got about 60 plus, just over 60 miles on them, and they're not really showing too much wear. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. I really like the Hoka 1-1 model. I really did, and I just was really surprised how quick the heel wore out. I know I'm a heel striker, and I just kind of thought shoes should last longer than that. And I don't drag my feet either. And I know that they're trail shoes, But trail shoes shouldn't wear out that quick on pavement. They just shouldn't, in my opinion. All right, so that's it with the shoes. Let me, before I get into the bandits, I got to talk about a couple other things. This past Monday, Memorial Day, in lieu of attending any Memorial Day events, our family was way overdue for a family hiking trip. We've been talking about doing it, talk, and Memorial Day just became the perfect day that we had. Well, we didn't get invited to anything. and it was, the weather was going to be perfect, a little warm, and then it just worked out for the perfect day. Now, I love living in Virginia. One of the things I really love about living in Central Virginia is the beach is 2 hours to the east and the mountains are 2 hours to the west. And we have mountains in Virginia that are foothills compared to the Rockies. I mean, you know, I understand that. But the thing that you got to understand about the mountains in Virginia is how accessible they are. And you can get there just in 2 hours from here. So what we did is we decided we're going to hike Elliott Knob. And Elliott Knob is the highest elevation in George Washington National Forest, and at about 4,653 feet, which, again, is nothing, you know, it's no towering mountain. But, you know, it's pretty cool when you can hike all the way to the top. So the trailhead was right at 2,200 feet, and it was about 4.5 miles from the trailhead where we parked to the summit. Well, years ago, my dad and I had attempted to hike this route when I had a different dog, and we attempted to hike it in January or February. I couldn't remember. We knew there'd be snow up at the top, and we were prepared for that because we know what we're doing. We're hiking, but I didn't expect how much snow there would be. So, and I had to, at the back of the time, I had a different dog. It was a female dog named Basil. Real headstrong dog, and she would have no problem with these hikes. And anyway, we had to turn back because the snow got so deep. And but we never got to the way the hike works is it's about 3/4 of a mile forest road. Then you get to your single track, which is the bulk of the hike. And then at the end, it's about a mile, pretty much straight up the mountain access road by because there's communication towers at the top, because it's the highest elevation. So there's a road that you actually take up, but it's not a switchback road. And we never got to that on the first time around, so I didn't know what it was going to be like. Well, anyway, we had to turn back. This was back before my daughter was born, so we're talking, 13, 14 years ago. And the snow was too deep for the dog to go through the snow. In other words, when we got closer to the top, the snow, was like 6-7 inches deep. It didn't bother me as much as it did the dog was just having some trouble getting through it, because the snow was the type of snow where the top layer is ice and you have to step through and break the icy layer to get before you hit the ground. It's kind of hard to explain, but what happens is the snow kind of melts and then it freezes on the top. And so what was happening was sometimes she would step in the snow, sometimes she'd stay on top of it because the ice was strong enough, or she wouldn't put as much pressure down. And so it was just getting really weird, and it was no trouble seeing the trail because it was blazed, but it just got ridiculous. So we turned around and came back, but I always wanted to do Elliott Knob. So this past Memorial Day, the Ashland Day family took it upon themselves to get out there, and that was it was pretty hard. It was no issues getting up to the access road. There's a couple waterfalls that were pretty cool. Blue went with us, our four-legged friend, and but what happened when we got on that road, that there was no shade anymore, and it got too much for my 12-year-old, and I felt kind of bad because she's never really been physically challenged like that before, whereas I've done ultra marathons and been in some pretty dark places, and I knew that I was not going to be all the way out there and not make it to the top, and I knew my wife could do it. But we had our 12-year-old with us, and what was also happening was the dog was trying to find shade, and when he found shade, he would then just lie down. So the dog was even really, really tired out. Well, it took us about, 2.5 hours, almost 3 hours to get to the top, 4.5 miles. And we got there. We ate lunch. Didn't bring enough water. The view was just spectacular. Just spectacular. And then, of course, we went back down, and now we're laughing about it now. But the aftermath is the following. When I got up Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, my body felt like it had run a marathon. I mean, that's how sore I was all over. And it was a quad killer coming back down that steep Jeep road, which, again, had no switchbacks. It would just kind of alter to the left some. It would alter to the right some. And it was really hard. So that's how physically demanding that hike was. I was really surprised. My wife was sore all week too. And then to compound that, I got that head and chest cold all week. And right, Tuesday when I woke up, I started feeling some, and went to work, I started feeling some, that feeling in my throat. And then I think Wednesday I came home and just lied on the sofa all evening, and started feeling a little bit better Thursday afternoon. And then Friday was almost back to normal, and then today I ran 4 miles. So, yeah, I got a whole lot of mileage in this week, and since that mileage was so hard going up and down that mountain, I counted that in my my mileage for the week. I don't care. I don't care if it took 30 minutes to go a mile. I'm counting that because of the soreness that I put on my body, pretty much equal to run. So that was Elliott Knob. It's a great, challenging hike. And the reason people do it is because there's great camping up at the top. There's covered, protected camping areas underneath some large spruce trees. And it's just a cool area. I don't really know how to describe it. It's pretty high up for Virginia. So, and then we had another funny thing happen. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was running. Where was it, last weekend? I can't really remember when it was, but I was sitting outside the little coffee shop in downtown Ashland, which is right on the railroad tracks. And it's called the Caboose. It's a wine and cheese shop, but there's two guys run it. Well, one guy really runs it, named Ian, and then he's hired a guy named Bart Bartley, who runs the kind of the coffee and the pastry side of it. And so he opens up early Saturday mornings for coffee, and they have little tables out front. It's a really cool little quaint shop. There's another coffee shop in Ashland called Ashland Coffee and Tea. But I kind of followed Bart wherever he went to work, kind of go where he goes. And he's worked at some different little shops in the downtown area, and I just kind of like to go where he goes. And so I'm sitting there with my daughter, and my wife was there. We're all just having some coffee. Daughter was not having coffee. And an Amtrak train comes through and stops. And one of the, I guess they're called conductors, the uniform guys that are running the trains, he gets off the train, goes in the coffee shop, and just stands at the doorway, and then says, "I've always wanted to know what the inside of this place looks like." And he turns around and he gets back on the train. Keeping in mind, there's a train station right in the area, so that's why the Amtrak stops in town. But it was just kind of funny. I don't know. I guess you had to be there. All right, bandits. Let's talk about race bandits. Have you ever been a race bandit? I have never been a race bandit. I'm against that. What I'm thinking about in the next show is doing a little funny segment called Two Types of People. I haven't decided that yet. There are two types of people. There are people that pay for races, and there are people that bandit races. I mean, you don't just bandit once. If you bandit, then you bandit. I mean, well, the reason I wanted to do a show about this is because it comes up from time to time in the on the Richmond Roadrunners message board. That's the that's the local running club that I used to be a member of. But I'm not anymore, but for somehow I'm still able to post on the message board. I haven't in a long time, and I don't want to take advantage of it. But I do volunteer for races, and I kind of have a barter system going on with one of the timing guys where we're able to use one of the clocks for free from time to time. Anyway, this was an article in the Richmond Times-Dispatch again. I don't even remember what day it was. It was about a month ago. It was right after the Monument Avenue 10K, so I guess that would have been March. And it was in the sports section. And it was the front page of the sports section. I think it was the front page. And it has a picture of a bandit crossing the finish line with no bib on, has her name, Her name is Rosa Caballos. So I'm going to call her out. And she's running across the finish line with somebody who does have a bib. And it's called, the article's called Foot Fault, Bandits, a Concern to Organizers of Richmond's Two Big Running Events. Now, the other big running event, I guess, is the 10K, and then I don't know what the other one they talked about. I guess they're talking about the Richmond Marathon. So what happened in this situation here, and the reason I'm talking about bandits is because I happen to have very, very close ties to law enforcement, closer than you would think. And so I know a little bit about how the police look at someone who's being a bandit. You know, some people think it's stealing, other people think the roadway's public. So we're going to talk about a little bit about that in this podcast, and maybe you know, if you feel like commenting on some of my comments, please do at ashlanddave@gmail.com. And if they're polite comments, I'll certainly include those in the show. But the article is written by Vic Dore. He's a regular sports writer here in Richmond. And it starts, Tom Suddeth, a former law enforcement officer, knows illicit behavior when he sees it, and he sees it each spring when dozens of unregistered runners attempt to participate on the sly in the UCROPS Monument Avenue 10K. Now, if you don't know what the Monument Avenue 10K is, it's the third or fourth largest 10K race in the country. It's held every year in March in Richmond. It's an awesome event. I've worked a water stop there. I didn't do it this past year because I was on call for work. I've only run the race, I think I've run it twice. Actually, that course is my 10K PR. That's the only time I've ever broken 50 minutes in a 10K. And it's a great event for Richmond. It's got over 40. Well, they bill it as 40,000 people register, or over 40,000 people register. I don't really remember how many actually sign up. Well, this past year was 36,300. Okay. Suddeth is the coordinator of elite athletes for the 10K and the Anthem Richmond Marathon in November. He said, "Running without registration is in essence thievery. In my opinion, it's stealing. It's that simple," Suddeth said. "It's like watching a movie after sneaking into the theater through the back door. The road racing community attaches the label bandits to such individuals. It's a very, very frustrating problem, especially if you understand the time and effort and expense required to put on an event like the Monument Avenue 10K. You're just going to show up at the start and consume resources and use roads that other people have paid for. If that's not stealing, I don't know what is. I do know this. It leaves a very bad taste in my mouth." Yeah, is that stealing? I look at it like this. If you, well, I really don't want to show my cards at this point on what my opinion is. But if, unless you're drinking the water that the race people put out, you're not stealing anything. You're on a public road, and you can't steal the road. You're stealing the spirit of the event, in my opinion. You're not stealing it. And I don't think that you have to pay for a permit to use the road. More than 36,300 runners, joggers, and walkers registered. More than 27,400 finished. Race director Lisa Randolph said participation by bandits was significantly smaller but not insignificant. Randolph said security officers at the starting corral looked specifically for runners without official bibs. Two individuals stationed about one-fifth of a mile from the finish line performed the same task. Bicyclists and runners with dogs or baby strollers also were escorted off the course. Randolph estimated between 100 and 200 unregistered participants were picked off Saturday by security attendants. That's a lot, in my opinion. She said it's inevitable some will slip through the cracks each year. Problem posed by bandits, Randall said, is one of safety more than honesty. It's not just a person drinking water or Powerade they didn't pay for. It's an unknown number of people cumulatively taking up space and resources. Again, if they don't consume anything and taking up space, what, they're breathing air? This is the important part. How are we supposed to identify them if something happens? How are we supposed to know their medical histories? Who do we contact in the event of an emergency? Each bandit, Randolph said, puts an additional strain on our resources and pushes us that much closer to not being able to properly manage the event. In addition, each unregistered runner excuses himself or herself from an entry fee that begins at $30 and climbs to $55 on the eve of the race. Jasmina Hernandez of Disputana ran with an apparent bandit. This is the lady whose picture was taken. Hernandez said that she encountered Rosa Sabalas for the first time in the starting corral Saturday. Sabalas, friendly and engaging, commented on Hernandez's choice of outfits as the two jogged toward the starting line. Hernandez, like Sabalas, wore dark leggings with a key lime colored shirt. Hernandez noticed Sabalas was not wearing a bib. She said she didn't have one, Hernandez said. The two talked in spurts during the 6.2-mile run. Hernandez learned that Sabalas is a fanatic about running, and she is an out-of-towner who heard about the race and just decided she needed to do it. Well, there's something called registration, you dope. Otherwise, Hernandez said, I got no information at all. Multiple attempts to contact Sabalas were unsuccessful. So it sounds like the Victor tried to locate her, to interview her. Hernandez said that she enjoyed Sabalas' company. The two crossed the finish line in tandem, arm raised in celebration, one winner with an official number, one without. The moment was captured by Times Dispatch photographer P. Kevin Morley. Each woman identified herself at the photographer's request. Sabalas escaped not only the attention of security attendants at the start, but also the scrutiny of Mark Guzzi and Sam Lowe near the Franklin Street finish. Randolph refers to Guzzi and Lowe as the event's bouncers. Guzzi estimated he and Lowe halted as many as 60 bandits on Saturday. The people who paid to participate are the people who earn the right to finish, Guzzi said. We just asked politely to see their number so we can verify that they're registered runners. The explanations of runners who cannot produce a number, Guzzi said, are endlessly creative. Some guys get right up in your face. This is a public road. I have a right to be here. And I'll comment on that in a little bit. Sometimes it's, oh, well, my number fell off. Or, oh, gee, I must have left my number in my car. Or, but I'm running for my grandfather. He has cancer. The presence of a uniformed sheriff keeps these discussions brief and, for the most part, civil, said Guzzi. We say, okay, then, why don't you step right over there and tell your story to the officer? And I'm going to comment on that here in a second, too. Often, the suspected bandit then slips through the temporary restraining fence and disappears into the crowd. Randolph finds the issue ironic in a way. There's such a strong bond in the running community. Often, people participate as bandits because they want to join in. They want to share in that sense of community. But what they're actually doing is further isolating themselves. The sports backers, Richmond sports backers, the event's primary organizers were sued for $30 million when an unregistered competitor was partially paralyzed after sprawling headfirst into a mud pit at the 2010 Filthy 5K Mud Run. The parties agreed last summer to a $300,000 settlement. And I'm going to comment on that here in a second, too. All right. Let's go back to the guy saying, hey, this is a public road. I have a right to be here. Of course you do, as a spectator, okay? That's what the public road is for. And here's where I'm going to speak from experience directing the Ashland Railroad Run. I don't know how it is in Richmond, but we have to get a permit to have that event. The permit requests for the roads to be closed for your event. However, therein lies a gray area when you say the roads are closed. Well, who are they closed to? Who are they closed to? Are they closed to who? Non-registered people? I mean, who? You're closing the roads to vehicle traffic is why roads are closed. And the police that are working the intersections, they're going to be hard-pressed to arrest somebody. Okay, that's the only way you can stop a bandit is to physically arrest them. You can yell at them if you want, but yelling won't stop somebody. Most people usually are verbally compliant, but what if they're not? You know, what if they say, I have a right to be here, it's a public road? Well, it is. And I presume, this is how the Ashland Railroad Run would be. If somebody was to be out running the railroad run, the 10K or the 5K or the kids run, whatever, and they were not registered, they're on a public road that I don't own. And we don't, the event coordinators don't necessarily own it for the day. The police are really the ones that close the road, and they're really the ones in control of who gets to go on the road and who doesn't. Now, it's, you'd be hard pressed to make a trespassing case. You really would. But I personally think that that's the law that they're breaking. They're not stealing anything of value. They're stealing the spirit, okay? You can't put a value on the spirit of the event. These events are to make money, to help charities, to help these companies do more events for people to have fun. That's the product that's being produced is fun. But you're going to be very hard-pressed to legally keep somebody off of a public roadway that the police have closed the vehicular traffic. And if you have an officer, like this guy Guzzi said in the article, you know, well, go over there and tell your, explain that to the police officer. The police officer is not going to be pulled off his post to make an arrest for somebody that's trespassing, because who's going to come take that officer's place? These events have certain amounts of police that are assigned to work out there. And the goal is for there to be no problems and to have everything go smoothly and not get plucked off the course with an arrest, unless someone's being violent. That's different, okay? Or if it's an emergency situation. They're going to tell the person they can't be on the road if they're not in the race. Most police aren't even going to understand how that works anyway. Trust me on that. So the public roadway is a hard thing to argue against. The next thing is... step over here and tell the story to your officer. I think I already hit on that. And then the last thing is the Sports Backers was sued by this guy that jumped in the mud. Well, you know, this guy shouldn't have been there to begin with. I happen to know that the city owns the property down there, and you wonder if the city of Richmond, or even the town of Ashland for this matter, they're the ones that own the road. Would they actually press a trespassing charge against somebody? You know, this guy that dove in the mud, I mean, the poorest of bees is paralyzed for life. And I read some other articles that most of the attorneys got that $300,000 settlement. He should have gotten nothing. He shouldn't even been there at all. And then he had the balls to sue for $30 million. That should have been thrown out, because he should not have been there. He did not register for the race. He took the danger upon himself by going and diving in the mud without even registering for the race. And that's probably the best example of a dumbass, is somebody who doesn't register, doesn't know what the risks are, and they go jump in the mud and they get paralyzed, and then they want money to compensate for their stupid decision. But yet, Sports Backers had to defend themselves, and they had to, you know, they have the $300,000, obviously they have insurance. But he should have gotten nothing. The attorney should have gotten nothing. The attorney that took his case should have said, you have no case because you should not have been there. I don't understand how people can sue for something that they shouldn't have been doing. Kind of like the person that comes over to your house and rides on your skateboard ramp in your backyard while you're not home. You know, you have it chained off. They cut the chain, they skate on it, get hurt, and then they want to sue you. To me, that makes no sense at all. I don't understand, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't understand how these suits can get through court. What about the person who refuses to go off the course? Okay, this is the solution. This Sabalas lady, she should be banned from all Sports Backers events because she banded the race and then actually had the gall to jump at the finish line like she owned the thing. And she has no bib on. She looks silly. And what was her quote? Oh, she just heard about the race and just needed to do it. You know, it's ridiculous. So she should be banned. These other people that get plucked off the course, they should be asked for their names. Now, when people are at the end of a race and they're being asked that they don't have a bib, we need to come off the course, that is the time right then to ask them what their name is, because that's the time that they'll probably be the most likely to tell you what their name is, instead of coming up with some fake name. Now, I think, and then you ban those people from those events. I don't know. I don't think forever, for maybe for 2 or 3 years to get their attention. I mean, that's my opinion. So that's bandits. I'm kind of curious to what other people have to say about bandits. When I saw that this guy had actually got a settlement for being a bandit, it just made me angry. I don't understand how. I just don't understand how you can get money out of something you weren't supposed to be doing. And then for this lady to be, her picture to be taken right at the end of the race. And this other, shame on this other lady for letting the bandit run next to her and for not giving her the business, for not registering. They should be shunned. They really should. All right, well, I'm not really that angry about it. I know it sounds... My tone of voice, I think, sounds It's just kind of hard to believe. So I was just kind of curious. I know I got an email from Shelley about Bandits at the Marine Corps Marathon. How they both got two people got banned for switching up bibs or doing something. I'll check her email here in just a few. Okay. Well, that's the show about Bandits. Let's get into the email bag section of the show. So you checked in this week. Did hear from Sandy. Sandy has gotten entered into the Barkley Fall Classic. It's probably known as the toughest 50K in the country. It's on the same course that the Barkley Marathons is held on. Limited to 300 runners, and she was one of the last 10 to get in. I'm trying to figure out when that is. I guess in the fall. So she knows three other people from her area that are going. Well done, Sandy, and good luck. She got a email from the race director. I got to share some of this. She gets, greetings, you poor fool. It is with the utmost regret that I inform you that your entry to the 2014 Barkley Fall Classic has been accepted. While we realize that you probably do not rue the day that you submitted your application, we know that the magnitude of your error will become obvious when the sun sets on September 20th. So that's when it starts. Thus, we wish to emphasize at this point that this unfortunate situation is entirely due to your own misguided decision to apply to the race. That's pretty funny, and that sounds like Gary Cantrell, if he's involved with that. I think he still does those. He's got a bunch of other stuff about cutoffs, drop bags, flashlights, trails. So Sandy, all the best with you on that, and yeah, let's try to do the interview one of these days about the five marathons in 5 days. Heard from Ryan Goldenberg, and he sent me an interview with the JFK 50 winner. That's the guy I think that trained on a cruise boat. I will get to that, Ryan. I'm sorry. Heard from Thomas over at Master Competitor at blogspot.com, and he did the Oak Mountain 50K. He sent me a report, which I still need to review. I'm sorry, that was back in early. That was back in early April. Heard from Shelley, and she sent me the article of the Marine Corps. Not the Marine Corps Marathon. It was the Marine Corps 17.75 kilometer winner. The runner wore someone else's bib. Both men were banned from Marine Corps MCM, I guess Marine Corps Marathon events, for the rest of the year. The man who won the 17K on Saturday, April 12th, did so wearing a bib that belonged to another runner. He's been disqualified. Gerardo Avila was the first person to cross the finish line, clocking the time of 1 hour, 4 minutes, 25 seconds. However, he was wearing the bib of Steve Henry, and he identified... he identified himself as Henry in post-race interview. Both men will be prohibited from participating in the 39th Marine Corps Marathon in October or any other Marine Corps Marathon event through the remainder of the year. Here we go. Illegal transfers of bibs have significant ramifications, including potentially altering age award results, but more significantly, should a bandit runner require medical attention during the event, medical personnel will not have necessary information about the individual. Participation in the MCM event echoes the U.S. Marine values of honor, courage, and commitment. What these two runners did defy these ideals. They badly misjudged the conviction of the Marines, our commitment to the core values and integrity of our sport. Henry of Maryland registered for the race on February 19th. Avila of Triangle, Virginia. I'm not really sure why they switched transferred bibs. I'm not really sure if that's really much of a bandit because they got the money. But there's a point to be made there about the medical. And here's the irony of the whole situation. You get somebody wearing somebody else's bib. It's got emergency contact on the back or, you know, maybe they're, I don't think it has blood type or anything like that, maybe special medical conditions. And what if for some reason you get the bib of somebody who's got some kind of medical condition and then you have a medical problem and then the medical care that's given to you because you've passed out is based on what's on written on the bib, you know, if you have medical information on there, and then you get to sue for malpractice. You see how ridiculous this whole thing is? Just don't do it. I'm getting mad just thinking about it now. But Shelly, thanks for the I really do appreciate you sending me that the article. I heard from Jeff Alashewski. Where's he out of? He's from Norristown, Pennsylvania, close to Valley Forge. Three-time marathoner with a PR of 3:43. He co-hosts a health and fitness podcast called The Next Level, and he's got about 10 episodes so far at tnlpodcast.com. I did check that out. I listened to the first episode. I thought it was pretty cool. So check that out if you have the time. TNLpodcast.com. That's Jeff's, and he's been listening to the podcast for about 2 years since he took up in distance running. So, Jeff, I will put you on the list for Stand Up and Be Counted. Thank you very much for listening to the show. Always appreciate it. Heard from Kurt, and he, let's see. He didn't say where he's from, but he says he wears the Brooks. He talked about this is Kurt Weisenberger. He wears Brooks Equilibrium shorts for chafing. He got into a little bit of an issue with the chafing there. Yeah, the Body Glide, I don't know. That was just one of those days. And, of course, I just signed up for that race again. I registered today for the same race that I had last year. So, Kurt, I'll put you down from Anytown, USA for Stand Up and Be Counted. Thank you so much. Heard from Mac. And let's see. He's from Portland, Oregon. And he discovered the podcast by Dirt Dogs Podcast. He's starting with episode 198. He's working backwards from there. He says, don't be surprised if you get an email from me referencing one of your old podcasts. He likes the laid-back style. You focus on the more everyday ultra runner. Some of the other podcasters are a little too corporate and seem to feature only elite runners. Mac, that's the best part of your email. I do sense that, too, in some of the other podcasts that I listen to. You're not going to have any corporate stuff in this one. Matter of fact, I've actually tried to get a sponsor or even someone that would advertise on the show where I could make, you know, maybe $10 a month to pay the server fee to Podbean. And I can't even get anybody to do that. So this is definitely always going to be an amateur podcast, it looks like. I think it would be kind of fun to have a sponsor just to have some fun with it. And make a little bit of money, you know, not get rich. I mean, I go to work every day. That's my job, not the podcast. But, I've been doing it since 2008, and I just kind of thought by now somebody would have approached me and said, hey, I'll sponsor each one of your shows, and I'll give you $20 a show. And I would say, hey, that's cool. Let's do an ad. But that hasn't happened. In reference to the elite runners, Mac, yeah, we're not going to have too many elites on this show. Because I don't really know how to talk to them. And it's nothing against elite runners, but I happen to know that if I was to get in touch with Michael Wardian, I could probably arrange an interview for the podcast because that's the kind of person he is. And a lot of these, some of the ultra runners are that way. It's just, I kind of like talking to people who don't win, you know, the ones that are, and nothing against Michael Wardian. If you haven't listened to him being interviewed before, you really should. He's a pretty humble guy. Pretty funny during the interviews, and he's really committed to his family, which is something I admire. But I like interviewing people that are just kind of doing extraordinary things and not winning, you know, middle of the packer. So that's what I like about this podcast. And it sounds like you're a mid-packer, Mac. So thanks for this is Mac Stilson out of Portland. Thanks for checking in, and I will definitely put you on the list for Stand Up and Be Counted. Always nice to hear. Let's see, heard from Bill Cahill out of Louisville, Kentucky. He says he's been listening to my podcast along with others. He says yours is different, as it seems you're actually doing something while you're podcasting, which is a little different than most. The story of the guy who lost his wife while running hit home as I run with my wife, and I can't imagine that happening. Yeah, that's Scott Menzies and his late wife, Meg Menzies. I can't remember if I put this in the last show or not, but I did see Scott at the Ashland Railroad Run. He was working the race. He's a police officer here in the town. And, I gave him the money anonymously. It was just over $200 cash. But he figured out who it was. And so he came and thanked me. So I'm thanking those that did donate. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Scott Menzies ran the Boston Marathon to honor his wife Meg Menzies, who died January 13th when she got hit by a car while the two of them were out for a run right near their house. It was awful. She kind of died, I think, at the hospital. But anyway, she was training for Boston, and he was able to run in her honor up there legally. He got permission from the BAA. Because that's the kind of guy he is. You know, he's not just going to go do it. He's going to, because he knew he'd probably get some media attention. So he did it properly. Well, anytime you go to a big city, and I knew that she was a stay-at-home mom and a police salary didn't make him rich. But the listeners of the podcast, you know, reached out, and we raised just over $200, and I gave it to him anonymously, but he figured out that it was us. And but that was for him to have cash to get around Boston, you know, transportation, just so he always had cash and didn't have to worry about spending his own money. So we heard from Bill here, and he said he recently ran with his 13-year-old daughter for, I guess, her first mini marathon in Louisville. It was a great, great feeling. The sport definitely lets you pass the baton, and he's looking to do his first 50K or 50-miler this year. And he works for, it looks like, a biomedical equipment service company. So, Bill, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for the email and the nice compliments. I'll put you on the list for standing up and be counted. Yeah, heard from Steve. Steve, yeah, man, just signed up for the dog run, so maybe we can carpool up there since we both live in town. You were up there last year, and it'll definitely be hot. He said he's getting himself ready for the 50K. He had a humbling run over the weekend, decided to do two 8-mile loops of the trail in James River Park. He overestimated his fitness, underestimated the trail, didn't bring enough water, and he said it took him 4 hours. He hit the wall during the run, and that was back in early May. He also he ran the Monument Avenue 10K in 45:12, which was awesome. And he had a 21:49 5K split, which was improvement from early when he did in December. So well done, Steve. Thanks for listening to the show. I'm pretty sure he got you. Yeah, I do have you down on the list, so I'm gonna get him your email. Thanks for listening to the show, and let's definitely carpool up to the Dogger 50K. Okay. Heard from Jeff Hager out of Colonel. It looks like he's a colonel in the military. He's an ultra marathoner. Longest he's ever run is a 100-miler. Currently stationed in Huntsville, and he's an active duty Army officer. Thank you, Jeff, for doing that. He's run all over the world. He's listened to the show for years. He says he never thinks about sending an email. Finally remembered to do so. He's run a total of 56 marathons and ultras. He has 6 more scheduled this year. He's run all over the world, currently stationed in Huntsville, Alabama. Enjoy your show. Run to it all the time. Enjoy your stories and the people that you interview. Wow, Jeff, thank you, man. That was really cool email. Sounds like if you're active duty, I guess you're probably career. And kind of curious to know what you're running next. If you're down in Alabama, then you definitely know how to run in the heat. And thanks for listening to the show. And just as a little side note, what Jeff said, he never thinks about sending an email, finally remembers to do so. You know, I'm the same way. I listen to other podcasts, and sometimes I'm out running and I'm listening, and I'm like, you know, I really should send that guy an email and just comment on what they just said. You know, trying to keep things positive. But when I get home, you know, you forget all about it. But as a podcaster, you know, we love to hear from people who, when we say something that strikes something in them that they want to give feedback or reflect on, that fuels my desire to do the podcast. It's not for attention, because you know I'm not getting rich doing this or anything, and I'm not, you know, popular because I'm doing it. It's just fun to share running with everybody. So Jeff, I'll put you down on the list. Thanks again for checking in. I heard from Paul. And he lives in Wexford, which is the southeastern corner of Ireland. And he says every June they celebrate Commodore John Barry, a Wexford native who was a founding father of the U.S. Navy, which is very interesting. He's been a listener for about 4 years. He's 44. Took up running at 40. He's done 4 marathons, a bunch of 10Ks, half marathons. All of it helped along by your podcast. So, you know, Paul, you know, that really makes me feel good. I appreciate you saying that. He says he plays in the wind band that has the honor of performing the Star-Spangled Banner at the annual Barry, Commodore John Barry commemoration in Wexford Town. So the end of the podcast always brings a smile. We do try our best to emulate those Marines. Really enjoy the podcast. Been a great help and inspiration as I've embraced the healthier lifestyle in my 40s. Keep it up. This is the reason I do the show. It's always cool to hear people that are inspired by the podcast, stuff that I have to say, which sometimes I wonder if it helps anybody, but obviously it does, and just like anybody else, sometimes I need some time off from electronic stuff, and that's why there was a little bit of a hiatus from the last show to this one, but I definitely wanted to get one in for the month of May. Although, you know, I do about two a month, and if you look back over the last 2 months, there were four shows. Just two of them were really close together. So, Paul, thanks for checking in from Wexford, Ireland. And that is the end of the email bag section of the show. We got a little long this week, but I thought you deserved it by being a dedicated listener. So the upcoming races for me, just to recap, I've got the first one's going to be the Dahlgren Heritage Trail 50K, which is August 2nd. So that's a marathon plus, so I got to get up. Although, you know, I will say I did 33 miles last week, 2 weeks before that I did 32. So this coming week is obviously going to be trying to get up to 35. I got to plan it out a little bit better. The temperatures are going to be in the 90s, and I will say this, the honeymoon phase of training is going to be over soon once the temperatures get in the mid-90s in this area. So I got the Dahlgren Heritage Trail 50K. I've got the Patrick Henry Half Marathon August 23rd, the Indianapolis 10-miler August 24th. So that's a Saturday, Sunday. I've done that before. I did that the second year of the Patrick Henry Half Marathon, and that was the first year I did the Indianapolis 10-miler. That is a big event up there. It sells out. So if there's anybody else out there doing the Indianapolis 10-miler on August 24th that listens to the show, and you have the courage to try to do a meetup that morning just to kind of meet and greet and chit-chat, you know, waiting for the race to start, all about that. You can meet my good friend Lummox, who took up running, and matter of fact, I don't think he's ever eaten any vegetables. He's a no-vegetables person. We can talk about that. You can meet him, and it'd be great to meet any other listeners out there. So that's the show for this week. Thanks for coming along. I always appreciate that. You can send me comments or questions or feedback for the show at ashlanddave@gmail.com. And this is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, don't forget to hug your kids, and y'all have a good week.